What's up, gamers? I'm Tori Dominguez-Peak.
And I'm Noah Hertz.
And I'm Willa Rowe.
And I'm Robin B.
And welcome to Press Mode.
Press.
Girl start.
Press start, girl.
Press start, girl. It's like, go piss, girl.
So we are joined this week. Nathaniel couldn't join us, so we decided to outsource the additional host seats, and we got a 2-for-1 deal on the hosts of the Girl Mode podcast, Robin and Willa. Thank you very much for joining us. Listeners who aren't familiar with them should, one, go listen to their podcast, or obviously do that, but also check out the previous episode where we had them on, where we really went like in depth about their interests and how they got into their podcast and video gaming and whatnot. But I think the idea this week is that we're just going to do a normal ass episode, and you guys are going to help us go through video game news, considering, I don't know about you guys, but like the world's kind of bleak right now. I mean, like it is most weeks, but like I'm having a hard time focusing on video game news and not like news of what's going on about other things.
Yeah, it's definitely been a lot. I literally live like right by Columbia, and I'm a Columbia grad also.
Oh,
so
my
it's like
God.
A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
But we're happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
always a joy.
Us.
Yeah, it's been a lot this week. Like also as someone who covers news and like just it's been a hell of a week, and like yeah, we're just here to have like a good time and to talk about the games we've been playing.
Fortunately, video game news is never terrifying or full of bad actors.
That's so true.
But yeah. This week's slightly better.
Yeah, I mean. No,
this
week is
slightly
better.
I mean, like maybe not for Square Enix though. Square Enix is having a really shitty week. They're just fucking hemorrhaging money, I guess. They lost $140 million in content abandonment losses, and so this is the result of a change I'm reading out loud from an IGN article. Basically, Square Enix is like, we've lost a shit ton of money, it's going to affect the release of what it calls HD video games. And so which I'm like, what does that even
I'm
mean?
Like, isn't that every video game
like,
now? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
That's the fun part
about
reading.
HD remakes of, like,
no.
Are they like FF9 remake is cooked? Like, what does this mean?
That's like whenever you have to read like these financial reports and stuff, they always use language that makes no sense because they're talking to people who don't know anything about video games. They're talking to like financial people. So they'll just make up terms for things, which is, I think, what they're doing with the HD games thing.
That's very
standard definition games are totally fine.
Yeah.
No worries.
Well, part of me was hoping that we would get a mention of HD 2D, because that's the Square Enix thing for those like remakes and Octopath Traveler 2 and stuff. So like
that's
they're
their
all
shift
in on HD
2D. Yeah, they're
now
only doing HD 2D from now on.
So I
would love if they made the third Final Fantasy VII remake HD 2D. They're just like
it would be so good.
Listen, I have a whole pitch about making the final part of the remake trilogy just like retro style. This is my pitch.
God, that would be so good.
We will talk later about Rebirth and how we've been feeling about Rebirth. I have lots of thoughts, but yeah, it's. As I've mentioned before, like one of the big things they were really banking on was FF16. Like they really thought they cooked, and like they did not cook. And that was like a huge loss for them. And like also like Rebirth did not do as well as it did in as it was like, I guess, expected to in sales. And like there's been a lot of talk of like, oh, like the Final Fantasy brand isn't what it was 30 years ago. It doesn't have as much of like a loyal fan base, even in Japan, than it was like at its height. And like, I think that's okay. I think it's okay if Square Enix is just the game studio for freaks like me. But like, that definitely is a step down from where they used to be. And I think where they're like used to being at.
I think the problem here, though, is like less that they're not making good quality stuff. Like 16, whether you thought it cooked or not, like did make a shitload of money. The problem is that it's not making like infinite growth money. And And like games take so long to make, games cost so much money to make that it is really hard to make an investment or a large investment back on a game that you sink Final Fantasy 16 money into. And so this to me just kind of reads like, I wonder if the result of this is going to mean like fewer of those middle grade releases. Like, I don't know, your whatever that card one is that they made like six of. And like, I don't know.
Like Strangers of Paradise. Like
I'm sorry,
Valkyrie.
Do you mean Voice of
yes,
Cards?
Yes, Voice of Cards. Thank you. Or like,
the Yoko Taro series?
I didn't realize that was Yoko Taro. I forgot about that. Or like...
real ones,
I don't
no,
know, like
no.
A Dragon Quest Monsters : The Dark Prince. Like, I wonder if we're just going to get fewer of those middle things, if it means that, like, it costs them money and upkeep to keep servers running and to keep these games, like, actually populated. So, I don't know. It's interesting.
So, you should expect that. That's part of the reason that this happened, actually. This recent, like, $140 million loss. When they say content abandonment losses, they basically mean, like, stuff they've given up on. And a lot of that stuff is, like, that middle budget. There was, like, a financial thing from the end of last year where the president of the company was like, yeah, we're not going to do middle budget stuff anymore. We're going to do just, like, blockbusters and indies, which is, like...
indies,
kind of a bump. I mean, that's what they, yeah, like stuff like Power Wash Simulator, things that are like at their little subsidiary studios. But yeah, it just really sucks because I think a lot of the mid-budget stuff was like the more exciting things. Like Harvestella, I think, is kind of the key example of that. Or things like Octopath, who knows, or like Triangle Strategy or whatever. It's kind of worrying that the most exciting things that they put out are kind of going to be the first on the chopping block.
I remember being kind of mid on the Harvestella demo, but like at the same time, I do think a gaming world or a Square Enix where they're like, we're either making Final Fantasy 17 or making Power Wash Simulator, nothing in between, is like really bizarre.
We're not even making Power Wash Simulator.
Lesser.
Yeah, it's like they're either making the biggest budget RPG you've ever seen, or they are like publishing a game made by a smaller studio. Like there has to be an in between.
Yeah, and it's like I think I might have been the number one fan of Harvestella when it came out. I absolutely loved that game.
I think that's true.
But it's so funny that they're doing this because, like, it's not necessarily new for them. Like, Square Enix has this reputation of famously always being like, this game underperformed for us, this game underperformed for us. And they always did that with, like, Tomb Raider and Deus Ex when they still owned those studios, which is allegedly why they sold them. And it's like, well, if you're still saying that your best franchises are underselling, then I don't think the problem is with those games. And it's like, it's part of the larger problem the industry
has. Yeah, it's a problem, their expectations.
Yeah, and it's a problem the like whole industry has, where it's like, you're gonna sink like 7 years into a game and spend so much money on it, so you can only like bet on those games, which sucks, because we do need more Harvestellas.
So in addition to this like questionable news about Square Enix's finances, Tori, it looks like you have a big if true for us in the document.
Yeah, this is a very large if true.
More questionable news.
I kept seeing, you know, those like Twitter accounts that are like, they're not like verified blue check, but they're like, they have like the gold badge, and it's usually some like weird shit. It's just like, oh, look at how happy this dog is or whatever. Or like it's like Dexerto or like one of those Twitter accounts. They're just like, they just show up on my feed and I usually just scroll past it. And then there was one yesterday that was like, a Kingdom Hearts movie is rumored, or Kingdom Hearts TV series, I think it was a Kingdom Hearts movie, was like, is rumored to like be in the works. And I was like, this is insane, Cope. I'm going to move on with the rest of it. And then I kept seeing it. And then I kept seeing it, and then I kept seeing it, and then it was like, Kingdom Hearts movie will be a hybrid of CGI and live action. And then I saw a Kotaku article, and then I was like, oh my god, like, this is real. Is this happening? And I guess it is, question mark. The original source of this Kingdom Hearts movie information is from this Disney-centric outlet called the Diz Insider, which, first of all, is such a perfect name.
That's so good, yeah.
One of the writers from that site said that he had a source that a film adaptation of the series would be heading to theaters in the future, and that the project started as something that would be released on the Disney Plus streaming service. What I'm kind of interested in here, first of all, hybrid between like CGI and live action, like that to me just sounds like fucking Space Jam. Like, you know, like we're going to have like the worst casting. It's going to be like Timothée Chalamet as Sora, and it's going to be like a little cartoon Goofy, and it's just going to be like, this is...
This sounds great.
Yeah, wait, hold on, back up.
I was going to say that
I hope this is fake, but then you said Timothée Chalamet as Sora, and I'm like, hold on a minute, like, you're cooking a little bit.
Yeah, I'm getting on board. Listen.
Maybe I'm cooking, but...
I legitimately love the idea that Kingdom Hearts, arguably the weirdest video game franchise ever, would do a movie that's live action and CGI hybrid. I think this is actually insanely galaxy brain good.
Yeah, that's true. I think I would feel weird if it was just like Disney cartoons
yeah.
all the time. You know? Like the Pirates of the Caribbean level, like that's hilarious to me. Like, it being all gritty and realistic, and then there's, like, Donald Duck. Like, that's Kingdom Hearts, baby.
Okay, I'm now getting sold because I'm picturing the part of the movie where Timothée Chalamet goes to Lion King World and turns into a weird lion hybrid like they did in the game.
Yeah,
and everyone looks like absolute monsters.
How are they going to justify the Halloween town? Yeah, there's going to be a lot going on. But my question overall is, how the fuck do you get, like, a franchise with a story like Kingdom Hearts into a yeah. 2-hour, like, first of all, where do you start? Because, like, do you start in the original game? Do you start chronologically in, like, I don't know, like Birth by Sleep? Like, what?
I think they just make the movie the next entry in the series. Like, they they always
Kingdom
make
Hearts
you play
4.
Some weird DS game right. to understand the rest. Yeah, they're just like, you need to play all these games and then watch the movie and then you're set.
I think they're gonna release a weird mobile game, and we have to play that mobile game to understand the movie.
The movie will actually be embedded in the mobile game.
Oh yeah,
I find this immensely hard to believe, and I think the reason I find this so hard to believe is that it's like Kingdom Hearts had like it factor 20 years ago when like the first game and then the second game, and it was like a big thing for Square Enix, but like, increasingly, and I hope to be proven wrong with Kingdom Hearts 4, but like, I didn't play Kingdom Hearts 3, but everything I heard about it and everything I read about it, like, it really seemed like it was just kind of like a vehicle for Disney to just push like their most recent couple movies. And I don't know, it's like, it's such an impenetrable fucking series. I have such a hard time imagining the higher ups at Disney making the decision to try and sell this series to a wider audience. Like, I could be wrong. I know people love crossover shit, but like, I feel like the audience for a crossover between Cloud Strife and Elsa Frozen is like exclusively the people who already are playing the games.
You just gotta explain that it's like Avengers Endgame for people who are really into JRPGs.
I will say this.
That would be a wild theater experience.
My household, I am the video game person who is obsessed with Final Fantasy, and then Zoe is a massive Disney adult. I have tried to get her to care about Kingdom Hearts. It just doesn't happen. I tried to make her play the first game, and she bounced off that shit so hard. So I don't think
it's a real, like, yeah,
I'm convinced you have to be a child. Yeah, it's like you have to grow up with it to like it. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
I cannot. One of my like a good friend of mine is like really into gaming and loves JRPGs. And she was like, Kingdom Hearts is the worst shit I've ever played in my life. It's like, yeah, because you played it at 28.
Yeah,
you got to be like 13 and be like, bro, isn't it so cool that Riku is like in the darkness? Just like me for real. Like, it's just, if your prefrontal cortex is already developed, like, this shit's not for you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
At least to start into.
I was about to say it would have, like, the strangest theater audience of all time, and then I realized it would just be Willa and Zoe, like the crossover of people who really care about video games and really care about Disney.
I'm imagining Willa showing these games to Zoe being like, oh my God, look, I got chocolate in your peanut butter. And Zoe's like, get that the fuck out of my peanut butter.
She was so fed up with it. Anytime a Final Fantasy character showed up, she was like, who's this fucking stupid looking guy? Like, why does he have spiky hair? Like, get the fuck out of here.
Like, that's the way it seems the series is trending. Like, the first couple of games have Final Fantasy characters out the fucking wazoo. But, like, it seems the further you get into the series, the more the Final Fantasy stuff is relegated to, like, background radiation. And, like, yeah. Now the games have such a complex internal lore built up that they don't even, like, between juggling the nonsense lore of 20 plus years of that series with the Disney stuff that they have, like, there's no time for what Cloud or, like, the weird fairy girls from Final Fantasy X are up to. Like, they do not have time. So, I don't know. I really don't know about this.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely have to put a pin in it. I do hope it exists for all five people who are watching.
This next news item that I flagged is some reporting from you, Robin, over at Inverse. Care to tell us some bad gaming news?
Yeah, really bad gaming news. So I guess yesterday, as of when we're recording this, it was announced that Take-Two Interactive, which is the like parent company that is the publisher of like Grand Theft Auto, the Rockstar games, also has this smaller publishing label called Private Division, which it uses to put out kind of like smaller, again, like mid-budget projects. And there were like huge layoffs at that publisher that involved closing Roll 7 Studio, which makes games like Rollerdrome and Ollie Ollie World, which are like excellent games, as well as Intercept Games, which made Kerbal Space Program 2, which is from all accounts not that excellent, but obviously still a bummer that it's being closed. And then as of today, there's been some more word that the layoffs are like actually much larger scale than that. Like Private Division as a whole is kind of pretty much down to a skeleton crew from what I'm hearing now. So rip to real ones. Yeah, I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's like you were saying with like the infinite growth, the need of infinite growth at publishers like Square Enix. It's the same deal with someone like Take-Two, where all of the games that Private Division were publishing were like largely very successful and critically acclaimed and sold well, but not quite well enough for this, like, I don't know, the eighth largest publisher in gaming or something like that. They just like have such higher demands that like no one can reach it. So yeah, just a really big bummer.
Yeah, I think for me, one of the things that was insanely like disappointing about this story that a lot of people have touched on is that, you know, Roll 7 has been around for a while. It's been around since 2008, and it's been a very successful indie developer with like all their incredible projects like the Ollie Ollie games. Private Division only bought them in 2021. So they essentially bought a really successful indie studio, helped it release a really successful indie game in Rollerdrome, which was fantastic, won a lot of awards, won a BAFTA.
Which won a fucking BAFTA. Yeah.
And then they're like, cool, we're just going to close you down now.
God.
Like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and I think... And like, Robin, deeper into your story too, you noted, and I like completely missed this happening. It's, I'm just going to quote Robin directly from Robin's reporting. Just a month ago, it, as in Take-Two, spent $460 million to buy Gearbox Software from Embracer Group, celebrating its new acquisition with a round of cuts at the studio. And that was like, okay, one, you got the money to buy fucking Gearbox. And two, I didn't realize that Embracer Group owned Gearbox. Like, that was a shock to me.
I think if you don't know about a studio's ownership, you just assume it's Embracer Group. They just got everything.
That's a safe assumption, right? God, it's just wild to see a studio that won a BAFTA like 10 months ago just like straight up not exist.
It's what people are constantly saying. Yeah, it's like, which is like, you know, there is no good reason for any kind of cut or layoff. Like, you can be the most exceptional, like, person or developer or whatever, and, like, you'll still get fucking cut. it doesn't matter.
No matter who it hits, like that situation always sucks. But for a studio like Roll 7 that was doing like wild stuff, like if you haven't played Roller Drome, it's like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater with a shotgun. Like it's the stuff that they're making is so bizarre and like nobody else is doing that it's like just feels like a, you know, on top of the loss of jobs, you're also losing this like really innovative studio, which is just so, just makes it feel so much worse.
Yeah, it made me think of the reporting that came out, or I don't know if that was as much reporting as it was like social media statements I had seen from folks close to it about like the staff from the staff of people who worked on what the fuck is that game called? Baldur's Gate 3, that game. Like the way that game was so massively popular, and then you've got the people over at Larian saying that like, yeah, by the time we finished the game, like, or by like 6 months after release of the game, like none of the people who they had worked with at Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro were still employed there. And like, it's those things. Yeah, it does not matter how successful the project is. Like there's going to be some reason to just like eviscerate the studio and lay a bunch of people off.
Yeah, and they're like, we're not making any more of these, basically, too.
Mm-hmm. On a very silly note, this does personally hurt me because I have always had a dream game that I wanted Roll 7 to make, which is that I think they were the perfect studio to make the SSX tricky successor that we've all been needing.
Man.
Of course you're going to proselytize for SSX tricky. I mean, you're right, though. They would have crushed it.
That'll never happen. Well, who knows? Maybe these developers will go on to do something else great.
Fucking ripped. They were so good.
Wow, I haven't thought about that in a long time. That's a real...
I keep SSX Tricky and SSX 3 permanently emulated on my PC.
I love that.
That's so awesome. I had the one for the GameCube that had like Mario and Luigi in it too. That one was awesome.
I remember that
like,
one.
You could just play... Yeah, it was like real human beings, and then like Mario was there, just like in his Mario size. It was great.
Did you ever play Sonic Riders?
I didn't.
I played I rented it from Blockbuster.
Because it was kind of like skating or snowboarding, but it was like a bunch of Sonic characters. There were some real obscure hedgehogs in that game. There were some like fucking green hedgehogs, like Sonic's cousin from the Game Boy Advance. What they were like riding like ripsticks. Do you remember this? I swear to God, I'm like hallucinating this game.
I mean, I remember ripsticks. I had one. I love that thing.
Okay, I found the guy I was thinking of. I never rode a ripstick. I don't think I ever touched one of those. Hold on. I found this guy I was looking for. He's like, now like, my predilection does not lean towards anthropomorphized Sonic the Hedgehog characters, but like, if there was going to be a Sonic character who I was like, damn, he could get it, it's this guy.
Please.
Copy image link. I'm working on it, guys.
I really need to see whatever it is you're about to say.
I'm dropping it in the Zoom chat. This is Jet the Hawk. He like he's pretty sick looking.
Let's all take a minute to talk about which Sonic OC you would most like to sleep with.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. This is like the green hedgehog sort of guy.
Sonic's cousin.
You know what? That's pretty cool looking, actually.
He's a hawk. He's Jet the Hawk.
I don't like it.
Yeah, right? He is sick looking.
He is like kind of a cool looking guy.
They gotta get this guy in the movies.
Yeah. You know what I also liked was Big the Cat. Like, remember Big the Cat?
Yeah.
Big the Cat's a good dude.
Sonic movie? I feel like, yeah. He kind of gives like Where My Hug At energy, but like, he seems like a nice enough guy.
Where the fuck
that is not the energy I want. Especially if it's someone whose name is Big. Get out of here.
When they talk about Big from Sex and the City, it's actually Big the Cat.
It has to be Big.
It's okay, so it's Big the Cat in the next Sonic movie, but he's voiced by Kyle MacLachlan.
And there he was wearing Armani on Sunset.
That's what's up.
Big the Cat.
Yeah.
Okay, what's this next news item? This one I am less familiar with. Who put this one in the doc? Help me out.
Yeah, I put that in there. I know you folks have talked about like preservation stuff and just like being, you know, older game sickos. So I thought you might be interested in this. It's something that I saw a lot of people pick up last week, but then I didn't really see too many people talking about. So basically the story is I first saw it reported out by Game Developer. And it's basically like the U.S. Copyright Office was hearing some arguments about a potential new exemption to copyright law that would allow researchers and like academics to access older preserved games remotely. And there was a hearing with it at the U.S. Copyright Office that the ESA opposed, with these really like facile and completely unbelievable arguments about how this is basically like creating an online arcade and it's going to like cut into video game sales and all this other bullshit, despite the fact that this would be like explicitly for preserving games that are not like purchasable anymore and only accessible for researchers. And the reason I basically wanted to pick this up was there is a live stream you can watch that's linked at the bottom of the this Game Developer article that shows the entire hearing that this happens. I'll also shoot you a link from, there's a talk from GDC this year that explains a lot about it. Just as like, they're both really good primers for people who are interested in learning about like what video game preservation is and like the current state of the fight. I wrote a little piece about this and I was like watching the live stream and I ended up spending like an hour, just completely got sucked into watching the live stream because it was so fascinating and just like forgot to write for a little while. But if you're interested at all in like preservation, I think it's really worth checking this story out because it could be a really good way for like researchers to access preserved games in a way that they can't before. And yeah, these videos are just really cool resources if that sounds interesting to you.
I will say one of the most interesting things from the story that I loved was that one of the people who talked during this, you know, whole debacle was Phil Salvador, who is the library director at the Video Game History Foundation. Other people may know him as the guy who runs Final Fantasy VIII is the dot best, which is a Final Fantasy VIII fan site. But anyways, Phil Salvador was talking and he kind of made this point that like nobody in these arguments is getting the real point of this issue, which is that the ESA and the government was like, you're going to make an online arcade. And then libraries were like, why the fuck would we do that? We're like, this is for academic reasoning. And Phil Salvador was like, even if we did like let this go through, libraries and academic institutions just like don't have the expertise or the interest to like actually do this. We need to like do more. We need to do more investing in like the few institutions that are actually like care about this specific issue deeply, such as, you know, the Video Game History Foundation. But yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's like, we're talking academic level here. We're talking academics, we're talking archiving, and like, I get that the ESA is like a big, prominent, like, trade organization, like, but I don't need the trade association from the video game industry weighing in on this. Like, this isn't their ball game. Like, I had to look them up to see, like, what they even still do, because with the E3 not really being a thing anymore, I was like, what the fuck does the ESA even do? And like, okay, they oversee the ESRB and they participate in lobbying as like a trade association does. But it's like, they are on the trade side. They are on the side of like consumption and production as products. Like, I understand that they feel they have a stake in this because they think it might like prevent people from spending money on video games. But it's like, I don't really need you guys participating in this conversation when it's about archiving.
Yeah.
not really their role.
And
like,
yeah,
I don't think
like,
we can really trust them to give a shit about archiving.
No. And it's even more frustrating when this is archiving games that are off the market. So like, they're not even preserving sales of games that are available now. They're preserving sales of potential future games that they might decide to publish again. It's just like, yeah, it's just so wild. There's also like a very startling fact that comes up in this story, which is also from the Video Game History Foundation, that 87% of games released pre-2010 are not preserved and are not accessible in any format anymore. And if you go back to before 1985, only 3% of games are playable in any form right now, which is like such an, like, imagine any other medium having that kind of loss. You can play at most 13% of like what's out there. Like, it's really a startling figure.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's the thing that we bang the drum about a lot, that is like, video games have such a short history as an art form and as a medium, because if you're somebody who is interested in video games, like if I want to get into reading, like, I don't know, comic books, like I can go out pretty easily and find collections of like seminal texts. But it's like, if, or same thing for like, if I want to get into like capital F film, like I can find seminal works that are part of like the capital C canon. But with video games, it's like, let's say that I want to make a deep dive into, I'm a new gamer and everybody's talking about this game, it's so important to the medium, the Ocarina of Time. What the fuck do I do? I have to either spend the annual subscription fee for the Nintendo Switch Online platform, or if I want to play like the spruced up version, I have to go buy a used 3DS off of eBay and a used copy of the Ocarina of Time 3D. Like, it is, or like, God forbid you want to play something on original hardware. Like, yeah, it's crazy how inaccessible this shit is.
I think that's pretty much all the news items we have for the week. I really want to get into what everyone's been playing.
Yeah. Do you want to go first then, since you are
yeah,
really,
I'll just get mine
it
over with. So like, I tried to beat Final Fantasy VII Rebirth last night and I got too sleepy and I had to quit. So I was like, I can do chapter 13 and 14 in one night. That's fate.
No.
This is the mistake everybody makes. I remember when I was playing it before it came out, I was talking to a couple of the other people in the Kotaku office who were like playing it and for like review and guides. And one of them was like, listen, when you get to the last two chapters of this game, you're going to think you can beat it in one night. You are wrong.
Okay, that fucking red dragon. It took me an hour. It kept like, there's a red dragon in this area, which I'm like, why? There's a dragon and it like spews lava all over the floor and you can't climb up and you can't really jump. So you just have to like hope you're fucking alive enough in terms of health to be able to like tank it. And like, it's really bad, but it's also like very RNG-y, because like my first time facing this dragon, he did it three times and I was like, okay, fucker, like, what am I supposed to do here? And then the one time I beat him, he didn't do it at all during that run. But like, it took forever. He was so hard to stagger. And now I did like, this game does a thing where it like forces you to have a certain party. And, like, it loves to split the team up. It's like Tifa, Barret, Cloud, which is my favorite party. I fuck with that party. And then they're like Red, Aerith, and Yuffie. And I'm like, oh, like none of these people can land a fucking punch. You know, like, I hate that party, bro.
Okay, first off, don't disrespect Yuffie.
I like your
like
ninja
that
star. But
I actually, yeah, I like,
she's low key maybe the best party member in my opinion.
I like Aerith too. I know nobody likes Aerith, but when you get into the rhythm of like the ward shift thing where you're teleporting between your wards, I think
she's
super
a great
fun
healer. She's a great
but
healer.
You're right. The forced party
there
thing is
super
annoying.
There was one party that was like, it was like Red, Kate, Sith, and Barret, and I was like, this is fucked.
No, I quit.
Absolute nightmare blunt rotation.
Oh my god. Can I ask like a story spoiler question that like we can put a tag here? Like, I gather that you are near the end of the game, but like there's still a bunch of things that need to happen before you end the game. Like, is Aerith dead yet?
No.
Or like,
no.
Okay.
No, she's not
like,
dead.
When did they
she's
kill
not dead,
her?
But they keep doing weird shit about it. It's like they keep teasing it and teasing it. There's a scene where Marlene.
Oh, weird.
Which, like, is Marlene even in the original game? I don't even fucking know.
Yeah, she's somehow related to Barret. Barret. Right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, she's Dain's right daughter, right? And
okay,
Barret adopted her. Anyway, so like there's a flashback scene where like Marlene and Zack Fair are hanging out. Don't ask me to
what
explain that. Don't ask me to explain that. They're at Aerith's house with her mom. Don't ask me to explain this at all.
What?
Absolute ideal blunt rotation.
Aerith's mom.
And
Aerith's mom could hang for
Aerith's
sure.
Aerith's mom's kind of a MILF. I'm not going to lie.
Absolutely.
But anyway, Marlene just is like, she's like looking over at Aerith because Aerith is like in a coma, question mark.
Okay.
And she's like, Aerith's going to die if she wakes up. And Zach is like, why do you say that, Marlene? And just out of the mouth of babes, right? Marlene is like, a man with long silver hair with the name letter S is going to kill Aerith.
What?
And you're like, what? And does that mean Zach that, is like, wow, that's crazy. And then he realizes it's going to be Sephiroth. And then that flashback ends.
So like, it's been established that this game takes place in like a timeline where some characters are aware of the events of Final Fantasy VII for the PlayStation 1. Like, is Marlene one of those characters? Does she have like The Shining?
Apparently.
That... Yeah, she played the original.
What it implies.
That's fascinating.
Apparently.
She played the original.
And like, where I am in the... Yeah, literally. Where I am in the game directly is like, we went to the Golden Saucer to get a key. Kate Sith got the key. He betrayed us.
Yeah.
He like rode out on a helicopter. He was like, fuck you, I got the key. And we were all very upset about it. And now we're like going to the Setra Temple where Aerith is like, I'm gonna do some magic. And Cloud is like, Sephiroth is definitely here. I'm getting my Spidey sense that Sephiroth is in the building.
He's getting his boyfriend and senses. Like,
yeah, so like, so that's where I'm at. I like, it's a very interesting part to be, because this game is split into three parts, it's so weird to like find a place where to end two.
Yeah,
it's like, I like, we did a bunch of open world shit, we got Yuffie, we got Kate Sith, we had a fun little like the Lion King arc with Red, it was great, and then like we're in this temple and like Sephiroth is going to show up at some point and like maybe Aerith dies at the end of this. I don't know. I don't really know how this section of the trilogy is supposed to end.
Gotcha.
So that's where I'm at. They had to do some real like Final Fantasy X Yuna dancing as well.
Like, I have been obsessed with this because I swear to God, when she does that dance, I was like, is this not like verbatim the choreography
it
that
was
Yuna
the
does?
Same. She was whipping it around and shit.
She's fucking,
I took a video of my TV and I sent it to Noah last night and I was like, people die in Aerith dances. Like, they even do the same zoom out. Like, it was like, what is going on? And she does it to, like, move a wall. And I was like, okay, pop off, girl. Like,
all I'm saying is Final Fantasy X-3 confirmed. You know, that's all I have to say.
I really need you to play these remakes, Noah, because every time I talk about it, I feel like an insane grandma.
Yeah.
Like,
it does sound like you're making, if I didn't know this was all real, I would think you were making some of that.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, this whole part of the game is so jumbled. It took me a full 30 seconds to remember the dragon you were talking about. Like, I definitely played it, but I was like, there's no dragon in this game. That's just not possible.
Also, can I just say, this labyrinth is straight up like a Zelda dungeon. You are climbing vines. You are flipping shit upside down. There are dragons and lava. I was like, what in the Twilight Princess fuck is happening?
Right? My thing about this dungeon is I low-key think it's like one of the best dungeons that a Final Fantasy game has had in like recent memory, but it's so long and they put it at the end of the game when you're like, just please let it end. So it's just exhausting.
Yeah.
There's
also like nothing else like that in the game. Like, it's just such a weird shift.
Well, I guess, okay, I will say the Red 13 like fire temple thing was kind of like this,
I guess.
That was a fun that was a fun little place. I like that place.
This is just always funny listening because like my experience, like the main thing I remember of my experience from playing the original Final Fantasy VII is that I spent like 5 hours doing chocobo breeding. Like, when I think of Final Fantasy VII, like that's the main thing that sticks out in my head. So like, we're over here talking about like deep story beats and all this stuff, and I have to kind of like rack my brain to remember who some of these characters are.
Yeah, because and like, Marlene being like the Sixth Sense Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah, so like I'm thinking back and I'm like, all right, try to remember your experience playing the back half of this game when you were 16. I remember breeding a lot of chocobos so that I could get the Knights of the Round summon because I was stuck on Sephiroth. Like,
oh, I will say the chocobo raising in this game is so good. They just made it into Mario Kart 8. It's so much fun.
It's basically Mario Kart.
It is extremely not in the original game. So that is good to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, chocobo
they
racing
need to just
in this
release...
game is gas.
Yeah, they need a spinoff that's just Chocobo Rancher.
Oh my god.
Instead of putting Chocobo Breeding in this game, just make that its own game.
That would be so awesome.
It'll serve the Noah audience.
There we go, yeah. Well, yeah. Okay, I will say, I did not enjoy that part of the game that much. It was literally just, I had not done the amount of grinding that I needed to do. I almost said I haven't done the amount of breeding I needed to do. I wasn't breed maxing. I hadn't done enough grinding, so when I got to Sephiroth, he was just, like, absolutely wiping my ass. So I was, like, Googling, like, how to level up good grinding, and all the game FAQs forums I was finding were like, bro, you just gotta go get Knights of the Round. So, like, the best summon in the game was locked behind hours of chocobo breeding, and so I did that, and then at one point, I had left my PlayStation on all night, and there was, like, a power outage or something, and I lost, like, hours of work, and so I
this is giving celestial weapons. Yeah. I'm getting like war flashbacks.
Exactly. Like people don't have that experience as much anymore of like, you know, you leave your game console on overnight because you're not near a good save point, and then you wake up in the morning and you haven't saved in hours and you've lost your progress and you have to breed four generations of chocobos again. Yeah, fuck that. But I did fucking wipe Sephiroth once I had Knights of the Round, though. That is like such a broken ass ability. So, you know.
I really hope they put it in the third part. Just make it, keep it as broken as original. It's just the like automatic win button. I think it'd be fun.
I really hope that the final boss, or I assume Sephiroth will be the final boss encounter of the final game. Maybe he won't because of some kind of like cosmic fuckery, but I really just want to see the updated version of his like supernova ability or whatever it's called. The one that's like 15 minutes worth of like him summoning a meteor that destroys every planet in the atmosphere, and then it comes and hits your party and like wipes out everybody.
Oh god.
Great
stuff.
That's
wild. So yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at right now with Final Fantasy. My only other item is that like I go to a bar studio, like fitness class once a week, and like it's nice. I like it. But recently their late policy has been insane. Like if you show up a minute late, they literally have a lockbox and you can't get in the studio.
What?
And I've missed three classes this way, and I'm really upset about it. And one of my friends finally like had a come to Jesus moment with me. She's like, I need to break up with this bar studio and just like get class pass and just like go to fucking somewhere else. And I was like, you're so right, bestie, because the studio is like $70 a month for four classes a month. Jesus. And I just missed three of them. And like class pass, the cheapest one is like $50 a month, and I can just go somewhere else. And like, sometimes you just gotta go somewhere else.
So, it sounds like this bar studio doesn't deserve you.
It's really sad. I really like it. There's one instructor there who's super nice, but like, why are they like padlocking that shit 1 minute?
That
after
is wild.
The 1:30.
Isn't that like an extreme fire hazard too? Like,
yeah,
you can't,
we're just gonna die in the bar
doors.
Studio. That's really funny, actually. What a way to go. Everyone's just pulsing, holding their Stanley cups. Jesus.
I think I'm remembering.
What a way to go out.
I'm realizing that I don't remember what bar is. Is this the one that's like tiny movements, or is that Pilates?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like it's like ballet and you're doing like tiny little isometric squats and movements.
Gotcha.
And there's also some like Pilates moves. And you're doing a lot of second position and like putting your arm over your head and shit.
Okay.
And like, if I just, the whole place just burned down while I did that, that would be fun. You also get to wear grippy socks, like the hospital ones, but they're cute.
That's exciting.
But yeah, I think, I don't know, maybe it's time. Maybe it's time I gotta break up with this bar studio and go somewhere else. That's pretty much all I've been playing. No, I'd love to hear everybody else's.
That's just like video games. That's like when you're at the end of the stage in Mario and then you run out of time before you hit the flagpole and then the match ends. It's just like Mario. This is just video games.
It's just like Mario, for real.
Very Mario coded, for sure.
Who wants to go next?
I can go.
Okay, cool.
So most of the stuff I've been playing is still embargoed, but I have been playing one game which is
the worst.
I know, we're so privileged and annoying, but I played this game called Pools, which is this weird indie game that's like a walking simulator, and it is basically about walking through these weird liminal, like back rooms inspired spaces that all have large bodies of water. Some of them have like water slides, and later levels get all wonky with like gravity and geometry. And the whole point of the game is that it's supposed to be like kind of evoke horror in you because you're like lost in its weird design and you don't know what you're doing. I played it and I did not find it scary, but for a very weird reason, which is that the only thing I could think of is all the years I spent as a professional swimmer when I would wake up early or like be out late doing swim practice and just like sitting alone on pool decks and like walking around pool facilities. So it ended up being like weirdly, sweetly nostalgic. To walk around these weird liminal spaces that are supposed to be horror. Very interesting moment for me, but...
Me yeah. Playing Resident Evil 4, like, this is just like where I grew up. This is making me so nostalgic for my hometown.
I did not know about this Willa, like, swimming arc. This is such interesting lore.
Yes, it is. It is my deep lore. I was a competitive swimmer for, like, a large portion of my life from... middle school into high school. This was like my life. I traveled a bunch all over and I would like go to some competitions in different states and stuff.
Damn, that's cool.
It was a weird life. But I actually compare this game to this memoir called Swimming Studies by an author and now artist, Leanne Shapton, who was also a competitive swimmer. It's a very interesting game. I hope people play it. I doubt they will have the same experience as me, though.
What's it on?
I did want to... it's on PC right now. I think that's the only place. It's on Steam. The other things that I wanted to shout out is that I've actually been watching a lot of stuff lately, and I wanted to talk about a couple of them. I went to the movies, and I saw Challengers, which has anybody else... like, do you guys know about this movie, or have you seen it?
I've been... So our other co-host Nathaniel is a person who goes to movies a lot, and I'm constantly asking him, like, should I go see this movie? Is it good? His verdict on Civil War is that Civil War sucked, so I didn't go. What is the verdict on Challengers?
You gotta go.
Okay.
Everybody has to get a ticket to Challengers.
I just can't get over the prospect of this like little mouse man who played Prince Charles in like the horny threesome movie. It like is really giving me a hang up.
Okay, that's hilarious that you say that, because for me, the thing that is a hang up for me is that Mike Faist, who plays the other guy in it, I know him from the Newsies musical on Broadway.
Oh my that's god! You just activated something deep inside. Oh, so this is such a... Well, Zendaya is fantastic and she's very hot. But the other two, nightmare rotation.
No. Listen, hear me out on this. And I know I'm the like massive minority here. Zendaya, I'm sorry to say, I don't think she's a good actress.
Damn.
It's a psyop. Thinking that she's a good actress is a psyop.
Wow.
Even in Euphoria?
Oh, yeah.
Oh my god, this is a crazy take.
But like, who benefits from this psyop?
I guess she does.
Yeah, I guess.
Interesting.
But the other two are so fantastic. And this movie is just so much fun. Like, you cannot not have a good time seeing this movie. I went with a bunch of friends and we all took edibles. And it was the premiere experience.
Do you think that was related, though? Because I don't know if that's going to be everybody's theater experience.
No, you will have a good time, edibles or not. My one criticism is that this is being praised as like the movie to bring sex back to cinema, which it is very horny. It can be hornier. I think.
Like, do we see any cock in this movie? Like, how far
dong.
Do they...
No dong.
No dong. Well, okay, here's the thing. We see one penis, but it is not either of
but
the main
there's at least
actors.
Two of them. What?
It's bullshit.
It's just an anonymous penis?
What's the point of a threesome movie if you only see one dick?
This is my
it's
thing.
It's not adding
this is my
up.
Thing. I agree. This is a massive criticism on my part, is that we needed more cock in Challengers.
Wow.
And I'm not afraid to say it.
You've got to write about this.
Will is starting a change.org petition right
You've
now.
You've got to write about this.
I think I would like to see it, but I think the main driving force for me right now is just knowing that, like, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross did the music for it. Like, I feel like most of the discourse
hard.
I'm seeing is, like, horny movie, go see it. And I'm like, yes, but it's also the Nine Inch Nails tennis movie.
That score is so good.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't that also the two people who did the score for The Social Network?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Classic.
Huh.
Yeah. It's probably like it's up there. It's not Social Network, but it's up there. The other thing I wanted to bring to the table is an anime, because I know we have some anime people here.
Let's go.
Is anybody here familiar with the old anime You're on High School Host Club?
I'm familiar. Yeah.
Can I say her haircut? The girl's haircut was one of my inspirations to cut my hair off as a Sagittarius.
Let's go. More deep lore.
That's incredible. I love that so much. Okay, so for anybody who's a fan of You're on High School Host Club, there is a new anime out called Vampire Dormitory, which
Fire
does dorms. Have vampires. Listen, this
that
is-
sounds like such a fake title.
That's
I
like
know.
An AI-generated anime title.
It really is. And I hate it so much because it buries the lead so much, which is that this show, sure, there are vampires, but actually this
they
is
don't
just
even live
a
in
fucking,
a dormitory.
This is just a copy and paste You're on High School Host Club anime.
Wow.
Okay, so it's like one human girl and a bunch of hot vampire guys.
Yes. It starts out with this like pretty boy who's like poor, doesn't have a place to go, and he ends up we find out, obviously, he's secretly actually a girl.
Okay.
And then he walks into a host club. And when he walks in, he bumps into a vase and breaks the vase. And all the hot boys around are like, you can't
they
do
all come
that.
Out of the woodwork. Yeah. What?
And then eventually, she basically has to go to the school they all go to, which is just filled with hot vampire boys, and she has to pretend to be a boy the whole time and joins the host club.
Oh my God.
It's just You're on High School Host Club, and they're bearing the lead by calling it Vampire Dormitory.
That's so funny.
You know, I was thinking about You're on High School Host Club, and it just occurred to me that anime came out almost 20 years ago. Like, it can almost drink. Like, the children don't know. Like, the Demon Slayer watching Gen Alpha, they don't know.
They need to be educated.
Yeah, they need to be educated. Like, that series definitely has its, like, weird way it handles certain people and certain issues. But, like, overall, it has a legacy.
I recently rewatched it. I'll say it holds up surprisingly well.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I can honestly
we should get
say
everybody here to watch it who hasn't, and we'll do a little watch party.
How was the part about the main character's dad? Was that, did that come across as like transphobic? Like, last time I watched
this
show,
I
was like, I
would
15.
Say it's not, yeah. I would say it's not overtly transphobic. Like, shockingly, there's still a little bit of weirdness in it, but like,
yeah,
overall, it's kind of chill. Like, especially the rest of the host club is kind of like, your dad dresses like a hot chick and we love her.
See, I miss this
one. I don't
one.
Know, man.
Like,
it's kind of still iconic.
Like, I heard from enough people who were into anime at the time that I should watch it and that it was like a seminal text of 2000s anime, but like, and like, I was on Tumblr, you know, so like, I was seeing shit, but like, yeah, I never watched this one. Like, I don't know, I miss out. I just know that like it had potentially interesting gender politics back in the day. And yeah, I kind of wondered whether said gender politics still hold up in our year of the Lord 2024, but interesting.
I think they do. Pretty sure the show's on Netflix.
Yeah.
Get okay, on but it, you've Noah. Also told me to watch Blue Period, which is like the most horrifyingly transphobic shit.
No.
I don't know
this
if I trust your recommendations.
That we don't need to have here. I'll fight you about this later.
Okay. We'll fight about it later. We'll see you in the parking lot after the recording.
Speaking of anime, Jesse, I caught is like a weird way to say it. I went downstairs and found Jesse watching something that I would never expect him to watch. Like, he watches anime, but he watches like dude anime. Like, he's watching like Blue Lock. He's watching like Mob. It's just like good old like boy anime. And like, I went downstairs one morning a couple Saturdays ago, and I found him watching this, like, it was an anime, but it was about like Chinese courtesans. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Interesting.
Is this Apothecary Diaries?
Yes, it was. There was like a hot guy with purple hair.
Yes, Master and, like,
yeah. Yeah, and he was like, I'm so into this, what? And this girl escaped the brothel.
It's
and,
a
like,
good show.
She's really smart. And I was like, what is going on?
He's on to something with this show. This
he's
show
cooking,
is so good.
He's cooking. Okay.
This show is one of the best anime of last season.
Interesting. Yeah, it's just like not what he typically watches. Like usually, like when he watches anime, it's like the latest episode of One Piece, which he has fully caught up on, or like Mashal. You know, so like coming downstairs for him to like, there's like the Sephiroth guy with purple hair, and I was like, what's going on?
I think the galaxy brain thing that anime did is in the English dub, Jinchi, who's the like male lead, he's voiced by the guy who does the English voice of Gojo from Jujutsu Kaisen. Mm. And they really fed the Jujutsu Kaisen audience, because at one point he says something like, you're a good girl. Huh. And let Ooh. Me just tell you, the Jujutsu Kaisen fandom
Ooh.
Lost it.
That's really funny.
I just hear the collective, like, intake of breath.
Yeah. It looks like, remember in that, like, the penultimate episode of The Last of Us, they had Pedro Pascal be like, it's okay, baby girl. And everyone just, like, went insane. Yeah.
So I guess, like, to come back to something we talked about earlier, I have, since I heard the news about Roll 7 yesterday, I spent some time, like, last night and then after work today playing Rollerdrome and Ollie Ollie World. Has anyone else played these games, either of them?
I played a lot of Rollerdrome.
Okay.
I've played a little bit of Ollie Ollie World, so I'm like familiar with those games.
I mean, for anyone who isn't, they're extremely good games. Like I said earlier, Rollerdrome is kind of like Tony Hawk with a shotgun, which is like not inaccurate. You're like skating, you know, roller skates instead of a skateboard, but it's this really cool kind of mashup of like, you know, skating and like arena battle sort of thing, where you're doing these like kind of like skating tricks and stuff in order to get ammo for these guns that you have. And there's people with like baseball, everything from like baseball bats to rocket launchers trying to take you out. So yeah, it's just a super, super fun game with a very cool, like, cel-shading art style, like, really great soundtrack. It's just, like, it's very vibey. Like, it's really, like, the presentation of it is incredible. So I played that in a little bit of Ollie Ollie World, which is, like, a skateboarding game, skateboarding side-scroller, which is very cool. And it really reminded me that, like, both of these games are incredible, and they're also extremely hard. I don't know if that was anybody else's experience, or maybe I'm just very bad at them, but it could be because I don't play a lot of games like this, but somehow like keeping everything straight, like doing tricks and also using your weapons and all this stuff, like it's very difficult. But yeah, also just kind of like made me very sad that this studio is gone now, because these games rule. As like someone who doesn't even play like sports games at all, they're a very, very cool twist on it, which I don't know. I just really enjoyed playing it. But yeah, so I played a little bit of that. I have been playing a little bit of Hades 2 as well.
Is this like the open technical test you were able to get into?
Yeah, the technical test that was running for like 2 weeks. It ran from like the 16th, I think, until like a couple days ago it closed down. So yeah, you get to play like basically up until the first boss. So yeah, I got to play. I guess nobody else was playing it. If from that response, it's, you know, if you've played Hades, you know exactly what to expect. I think I'm still not 100% sold that this is going to be like as good as the original Hades. I know a lot of people who've written previews are like, oh, it's like Hades but better. I kind of think like a lot of the joy of Hades was it being an original idea. And also like the way that it uses the kind of roguelike format to tell a story in a really interesting way is, I think, like the most appealing thing about it. And, you know, you won't really know if that's the case with Hades 2 until you've played more than like an hour of it. So yeah, there's like some stuff there that I'm kind of not sure about, but I think if you like the original Hades, you'll like Hades 2. I really like Melanoe, the protagonist, who is like Zagreus's younger sister. Yeah, she's a really cool character. She is like, I guess, the goddess of nightmares, I believe, is the setup. Which, I don't know, doesn't really seem to play into what you're actually doing at all. It's kind of just thematic. But yeah, she's like, she's great. She's on a mission to like kill the Titan Kronos. She's very like, I don't know, she doesn't seem as like jokey as Zagreus. So I'm kind of curious about how like the game's characters are going to hold up, except for Nemesis. There's like a buff lady who hates you in your home base. And she's like already the best character. So I played a little bit of Hades 2. But the thing I spent most of my time on this week has been playing Endless Ocean Luminous, which, is this a game that anybody's familiar with?
I am familiar with like the announcement of it, but I have not actually messed with it at all. I never actually messed with the original I never messed with the original Endless Ocean either, but like I always thought it looked like a really cool vibey game.
Yeah, I got a Wii like pretty late into its lifespan and also didn't keep it for very long, which is like what the original Endless Ocean was on. So I never ended up playing it. But I played Endless Ocean, and I talked about this a little bit on the last episode of our show. I didn't play quite as much of it at that point, but like the game had not come out at that point yet. And I was like, I really like this game, but I wonder how other people are going to feel about it. And then the embargo dropped a couple of days ago, and everybody hates it. It got like such miserable scores. And I had like written a piece that was like, we were waiting to publish until release day. So I was just sitting on this piece that I knew was going to be talking about how much I love this game, while everyone was like, this game is trash. And the story, it's just like unfinished and it sucks. But I think it rules. It's a diving game. It's about deep sea diving. You like swim around and you scan fish with this like special scanner that you have. And that's basically it. Like there's also a story mode, but the story is like, doesn't matter at all. It's like kind of busted. It's one of those things where I'm like, I get why it reviewed really poorly, because if you're playing a game for review and you're trying to like rush through it and see everything it has and like give everything kind of equal weight, the like badness of the story mode kind of drags it down. But I think as just a chill out game, it rules. Like I spent every night the past week just spending like an hour swimming around and looking at cool fish. And just like, if that's not your thing, like I don't know what to tell you, because it's like it's just the coolest shit. Like I've really been enjoying it. But yeah, that's like, also I'm also, as an annoying games journo, been playing some things I can't mention yet, so that's like the selection of things that other people can actually play. But yeah, that's been me.
I went to look up the original Endless Ocean because I was trying to remember like how critics responded to it when it originally came out, because like it came out when I was 10 years old. So like it was not the kind of Wii game that I was interested in. And like it's really funny because it's like it looks like it was received pretty well by some outlets. Like Famitsu gave it a 35 out of 40 and like really praised a lot of aspects of it. But like I'm on Wikipedia just looking down the list, and like Destructoid 5.5 out of 10, Eurogamer 6 out of 10, Game Informer 6 out of 10, GamePro 1.25 out of 5. Like it reviewed well with some publications, especially like Nintendo Power gave it a 7.5 out of 10, and so did like Game Trailers and stuff. So it's like, you know, not everybody hated it, but like it does not seem like the original was universally loved.
Yeah,
either,
it's very niche. So. Like, this game also has a couple of good reviews, but they are really very overpowered by the ones who gave it, like, GameSpot gave it, like, a 3 out of 10, which is, like...
Damn, that's, like, a cooking mama
a thing that
score.
They do. Yeah, it's wild. Like, yeah, the people are basically acting like it's a broken game when it's really just like, I think it's a very out of step with like what people expect from games like right now. Like it does not have modern game design sensibilities at all. Like it's very much, it feels like it's kind of in a little time capsule from like the original Wii days.
Yeah, that's like,
yeah,
kind of,
yes, I actually love that about it.
Maybe video game Podtimism should play Endless Ocean or Endless Ocean Luminous. It's like an okay yeah. game of yesteryear.
Literally, yeah.
Totally. Yeah, I think it's fascinating. I think it is the kind of thing. Well, I guess the other thing about it is there's also a multiplayer mode where you can have up to 30 people at once doing these dives.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah,
okay,
and I got
boys,
to do a couple of them. Yeah, exactly. It's so fun.
Literally.
I got to spend a couple of hours with like the multiplayer, and it was like, I don't know, it's really, there's something kind of cool about just kind of like hanging out and like, yeah, I don't know, you can like tag all the cool fish you find, and it's just very fun to like, oh, here's like a puffer fish, I'm gonna give it a thumbs up so everyone knows they can come over here and look at this puffer fish, and it's really good. Like there's something
that's
yeah
so
there's just
awesome.
Something sort of like charming about how
it's sort of Pokemon Snap.
Yes. I was definitely thinking about that. There's like a safari vibe to it for sure. Yeah, it's like, it's fish snap.
God, you want to know what game is like so high up on my list of like, if I ever randomly come into $1 million, I'll actually drop $150 on a copy on eBay? I really want to play that game Africa from the PlayStation 3. Is anybody familiar with this game?
No,
has anybody seen this one?
No way.
This is like, I'm going to pull it up. It's Africa spelled with a K. I'm going to pull it up on Wikipedia so I can see like, I can't just Google the word Africa. I
well,
have to specify.
The box
this is like when I tried to Google Pepper Grinder.
Wait. Yeah. I'm so sorry. Yeah. The first thing that I see on the Wikipedia page is that it's Africa, also known as Hakuna Matata in Hong Kong.
What? I like the box art, the giraffe.
So
the cool.
only thing... So it was published by Natsume.
Yeah,
it was developed
fuck?
By some company called Rhino Studios that I've literally never heard of. But like the last line of the Wikipedia like summary at the beginning says that it was referred to as like a very similar title to Pokemon Snap. It was like, it's very similar to like an Endless Ocean, but you are a photojournalist in Africa and you are just like photographing animals. Like, I'm going to read directly from the Wikipedia page. It says... the in-game camera is controlled by the 6-axis, so that's the motion control on the PlayStation 3 controller. And then it says, depending on the quality of the photograph taken, the player will earn in-game money. Real-life photos and footage of the animals can be unlocked, and when unlocked, they're stored in the animal library. Like, I want to play this game so bad. It seems like just like such a wild game that exists on the PlayStation 3 from that era of like, how do we get people who have never played video games before playing video games? And they settled on like Pokemon Snap, but it's zebras and rhinos. Like, I want to play it so fucking
bad. That sounds
bad.
Great.
Apparently,
but
the
it's, like,
soundtrack
expensive
is
as
good.
Hell. Like, yeah, right? It's one of those games, though, that it's like, that I don't think they made a ton of copies of it to begin with, and then it sold kind of poorly. So it just kind of like vanished. Like, I'm on eBay right now, and the cheapest copies that I'm seeing are like $130. And like, since the PlayStation 3 is region locked, like those are NTSC copies. Like, you can buy a PAL copy for $10, but like I would have to do some kind of black magic to my PlayStation to get it to run. So, yeah.
PS5 Africa sequel when?
Yes. If they can bring back Endless Ocean, they can bring back. I'm watching video of this right now on YouTube and it looks great. I want to play this game now too. You play as a guy with like cargo pants and a beanie on for some reason.
That's
anyway,
what every,
this
that's
looks
what every journalist
I guess that's
wears.
What photojournalists yeah, yeah. dress
the dress code.
Yeah. Okay. Was that everything from you, Robin? I just kind of wanted to excitedly.
No,
talk
thank
about
you for
game.
Telling me about the existence of this game. Yeah, that's it for me.
I guess that leaves me. I guess so. Okay, I'll start with the game that I played that I had never played before because I was kind of like playing the hits this week. I finally got Balatro on my Switch. This is a game that this is one of those like so me games that I just hadn't picked up yet. Has everybody here played this game? Like Tori's shaking her head. No. Okay, fantastic. Balatro is what if poker was a roguelike, and it's like it's. I had had it pitched to me by multiple people is like, you really like deck builders, like you really need to play Balatro. And like when I immediately booted up and the game is like, here is a hand of cards, make poker hands. And I'm like, fuck, I don't know anything about poker. I don't know what a flush is. I don't know what a straight is. So basically what you're doing is you start off and you get points for every like poker hand you make. You have a set number of hands you can make per round, and you have a point threshold that you have to make. And the roguelike element of it is that every time you clear a round, you get taken to a shop and you get to spend cash. And the cash can be spent to buy either jokers, which are like little passive power-ups that you get for each like that operate behind the scenes when you're playing. So it'll be like a plus X amount of points for every odd number card in your plays. And then you can also get other types of cards that like beef up specific things, like level up the multiplier you get points wise for a flush and this kind of shit. There's a button you can press at all times that shows you what the different poker hands are. So like you can just press minus on the Switch and it's like, hey, by the way, this is what a royal flush is. And it's like, thank God, because I would not remember that. It is deviously interesting and kind of enticing to play. It's the kind of thing that is like on paper does not sound that fun, and even upon like seeing it for the first few minutes I was just like, what am I playing? Because like you spend most of your game time just looking at like a handful of cards, but like I have yet to actually like beat a run of this game, but like once you get deeper into these runs and your deck of cards is like 60 cards big because you bought some extra clubs that you got in a pack, like you buy booster packs that will give you additional playing cards, like it is extremely fun and extremely great. Like I know, I'm pretty sure this is available on some consoles. Like Tori, have you been playing it on PS5?
We have it on the Switch.
Okay. I want to say I saw that this was available on some of the consoles, and I'm like, I cannot imagine playing this on any platform other than like the Switch or maybe the Steam Deck. Like it is the perfect like mobile style game of like pick up, play a round of Balatro. Okay, cool. I'm going to put my Switch down and then come back 15 minutes later and play another round of Balatro. So all my deck builder heads out there, like this is fun. If you haven't already jumped on Balatro, it's very fun. Other than that, like, yeah, I've really been playing the hits this week. So for starters, everybody on my social media feeds, I'm seeing a lot of content about the Fallout series, like in part the new TV series and also like the games. Like, I think TikTok just knows that I sunk a lot of hours into New Vegas back in the day and is like, you want to see all these TikToks of people playing Fallout New Vegas. So I was like, I don't actually own those except for on PC. So I was like, you know what the hell? I'll dive into a game of Fallout 4. I've been having like a surprisingly fun time with Fallout 4. Like I never really got super deep into this one when it came out. I was like really excited for it to launch. I remember the E3 keynote talks about this game before it came out where like Todd Howard was carrying on about like the dungeon design and this new engine they had for that. But like when it came out, I kind of bounced off of it. Like I wasn't super gripped by the story. I thought the world was like kind of pretty, but largely just very samey. And like, I think the thing that benefits the Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas especially is that like the open world is not that big and it's very dense. So it's like there are definitely areas you go where there's not a lot happening, but like it's a very dense open world with a lot going on. Fallout 4 has like a pretty big open world that definitely is not as good at like the, ooh, there's always something over the horizon to do. Like sometimes you kind of just have to pick a cardinal direction and walk until you find something interesting. And like I don't know. I'm still kind of having like mixed bag experience with this, but I would say by and large, I'm enjoying it. I'm like giving the systems that it wants me to play with a little more credence this time and like not completely ignoring weapon modification because I thought it was boring when I tried to play it 5-6 years ago. Like, I don't know. Has anybody else bounced off Fallout 4, loved Fallout 4? Like, does anybody have an opinion on this game?
I mean, I think I've spoken on the show a couple of times. I tend to bounce off Bethesda games in general, but my issue with Fallout 4 was like the camps, like they were always like, please come back, I need your help, and it's like, my brother in Christ, I give you 5 turret guns, like leave me alone.
And see, this was the thing. It was like, I never engaged with that system. I never bothered engaging with those systems. And like one of my roommates in college, like she is a huge Fallout head. Like her and I have been texting back and forth because she started a new game too. She is the only person I have ever seen, barring now that I'm seeing people on TikTok talk about it like this, who basically has treated Fallout 4 like Animal Crossing. Like she played the main campaign and she would do the gunplay and stuff. But like, she would be like, you want to come see my house? And it would be like, she had fixed up these towns to make them like not look shitty. Like they still looked shitty because you were only working with like a set amount of like busted up things, but it would be like, come look at this castle that I renovated, and here's my room, and here's the room where so and so is. Like, it was crazy how much time she put into the like the settlement building, and I never found it to be that fun, but I was always like really impressed that the game gave you that much latitude to play with that system if that was something you were interested in. So I like, again, I'm not engaging with that system, but like I've been engaging with like weapon crafting and shield or like armor crafting, and they have added some new content in. Like I talked last week about how the new patch they released for the next gen consoles like kind of broke it on PC, and it didn't do that on my PlayStation 4, but like there is new content. Like I got randomly assailed by a group of dudes who like absolutely were not in the original version of this game that I played at launch. So I don't know, mixed bag of experiences. I'm seeing a lot of head shaking when I mention a Bethesda game. Like, I gather that this is not like, we're not all Bethesda heads here at this show. No.
Yeah, I definitely bounced off it too. I bounced off it for the opposite reason, which is like, as soon as I got to the settlement building, I was like, I just want to do this because I don't think the story and like the main part of the game is fun. So I just want to do this, but it keeps making me go shoot ghouls and have a story happen at me. And I don't want to do that. So I'm going to stop playing entirely.
Yeah, I kind of admire people who are like really into Bethesda games and like can carve out their own like story in it or like thing they like about it. Honestly, I kind of just like sitting in them for like a few hours and just listening to the music and then being like, God, the Oblivion soundtrack, like I could just vibe in there.
Oh,
but
it's
like
great.
I don't know if I'd ever play Oblivion, you know?
Yeah, my thing with like Fallout especially is that I think Bethesda's imagination of the Fallout universe is one of the most boring things in the world. And I think they don't know what they're doing with a property that is supposed to be really cool. They just want it to be a theme park. So I don't like any Bethesda Fallout game. So
I think that's true of Elder Scrolls, though, too. I mean, like since Morrowind, they've kind of been theme parkifying them, like until Skyrim is like the most that way, which like there's such an interesting world to play in. And they were like, okay, but what if it was just like normal ass fantasy? It's just like, it's just not appealing.
That's the interesting thing for me with Fallout is like, I feel like I'm of the demographic, and I feel like Tori, you're probably of the same thought too, where it was like 3 especially was like the first of these games I ever experienced. Like I definitely got a cheap copy of 3 on the PS3. New Vegas had already come out, but like I picked up a copy of 3 and it was kind of like revelatory for me. Like I had never played a game like that that was open but not open, and that like had all these gunplay elements but like also wasn't encouraging you to use gunplay at every turn. Like I was really blown away by what the game was like trying to get me to do, and it wasn't until later that like I've still never played any of the old like I forget the name of the company that developed those games, but like the original Fallout games 1 and 2, and like they sound conceptually like they are so up my alley, because I did not realize that there was a time when this series was like saying a lot more and like really trying to do a lot more with its theming beyond just like, hey, it's the 50s and oh, the nukes. And it seems like the further they go into it, the choices you have to make become so much more black and white rather than like it seems like those original games. And again, saying this is somebody who has not played it, are a lot more interested in like putting you into like lose-lose scenarios. So I don't know. It's again, mixed bag experience with it. I am still kind of having fun with it. I'm still having the same problem I had with it at launch, which is that like so many of the areas you go into are so samey. Like some of those dungeons, it's like by minute 10 of being in that dungeon, I feel like I've seen every terrain I'm going to see and everything else is just going to look like the exact same. And it doesn't help that I'm playing it as like actually sifting through tables to try and find like duct tape and shit, which like multiplies the amount of time I'm spending in places that are like kind of boring me a little bit. So I'll see how much longer I last with it before I bounce off of it, but I've been having
fun. Do you plan on watching the show?
As far as... No, go ahead. I think I might. So I was originally not going to, like, it came out, it has kind of a stacked cast, like, I'll watch anything with K-Mac in it, and, like, I saw it also had Walton yes. Goggins in it, and I was like, I kind of fuck with that weird guy, but, like, my dad recommended it to me, and my dad's recommendations for me to watch things are usually, like, kind of off the wall, like, he has a very strange ratio of actually nailing things that I want to watch, but then my friend, who is massively into the Fallout series, like, encouraged me to watch it. She was like, there's some inconsistencies with the games, but it, like, really captures, like, the vibe of some of those games, so, like, I might actually try to give this a shot.
I've watched the first episode, which I did like a lot, so, yeah.
Okay.
I would say okay. Try it out.
Okay. Yeah. I would like to check it out. Yeah. Yeah. As far as other hits that I'm hitting, I'm still playing Chrono Trigger, a game that is fantastic and good. It's just such a good fucking game, guys. If you've never played Chrono Trigger, anybody listening, like just like I kind of went into this run of Chrono Trigger like, okay, when I played it the first time, it was very much like in my revelatory period of like, wow, RPGs from the 90s are actually so fucking good. And I was like, I wonder, and that's like the reputation this game has, right? Of being like the best game ever. And like nothing from that era can match Chrono Trigger except maybe Final Fantasy VI. And I went into it like, I'm going to try to be a little more skeptical and I'm going to try to like really try and determine whether it's nostalgia clouding my love for this. No, it's just a tight fucking RPG, and it's so fucking charming. It has more charm in like one conversation with a party member than so many RPGs I've played do in the entire game. And it's aided by just like how wacky the party members you get are. Like I fucking love Frog, yeah. The character in the game, who is literally just a knight's squire who was turned into a frog, and now he is just like the embodiment of heroism, and he's a frog that carries a sword. Like, he's just so fucking
best
cool.
Party member of all
and,
time.
I don't know, I'm literally the best party member of all time. Like, I have yet to play an RPG that actually quite reaches the heights of that, except maybe like some of the characters in Mother 3. Like, I love you, Frog. I love you so much. So yeah, Chrono Trigger, good, which is again another game with fantastic music and fantastic everything. I cannot sing its praises high enough. It's also another game that, like I said last time, is wildly inaccessible to play. Like, I'm playing it on my DS because I found somebody on Facebook Marketplace selling a cartridge that was shockingly cheap. But, like, if you want to play this game, you either have to find a DS copy, find an SNES copy, or, like, I don't know, boot up a Wii. And if you maybe bought it on the virtual console, or you can emulate it. You know, you could play it on Delta on your iPhone now. Yeah. But,
yeah, it's always so cool when you like start playing a game where you're like, oh, this is like a significant game. Like, this is, you know, important for the me or whatever. And then you're like, oh no, this actually just like slaps. Like, this is just a really fucking good game.
Yeah, exactly.
That's always a great discovery.
I feel like sometimes going back and playing like a capital I important game when you've played so many games that drew inspiration from it can feel a little samey, because it's like, I feel like, yes, I get what this game is doing. Like, it's kind of how I felt the time I tried to go back and play Bioshock years ago. Like, I had never played Bioshock at launch, so going back and trying to play it, I felt like I had already played other shooters that had done what Bioshock had been doing, just with like a control scheme I hated less. But like, yeah, playing Chrono Trigger, it's like, no, this shit is like, not only is it the template for so many things, but it's also fucking fantastic still. Other than that, the last thing I wanted to shout out is, like, I've been extremely anxious lately, which, you know, no surprise, I take medication for that. And sometimes some weeks the medication does less good than it does others. And back when I was in high school, I did this thing where when I got really anxious, I would go boot up my 3DS and I would just go fishing in Animal Crossing New Leaf for a while. And like the music and the vibes and like it would just relax the fuck out of me. And so I started a new game in Animal Crossing New Leaf because I really wanted to play Animal Crossing, but I really dreaded opening up New Horizons and having to talk to all of my characters who were like, it's been 2 years since we saw you. And like, I really did not want to have to endure that. So I just started a new save in New Leaf. And like, what's our Animal Crossing level of interest
in
here
this house,
in the chat?
We love Animal Crossing.
Yes.
Yeah, I know you love Animal Crossing. Yeah. Willa, not really about it.
Never played it.
Wow.
I stick with my Stardew. I've touched Zoe's
save. But you stan Harvest Stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
Holy
I do.
Shit.
That's fascinating to me, actually.
This is
like,
crazy.
The Animal Crossing hardcore,
yeah.
Like the real Animal Crossing heads have all turned their backs on New Horizons and are back to saying that New Leaf is the best game in the series. Like one of my cousins is one of those people, and like every now and then we'll talk and they'll be like, I'm playing New Leaf again, fuck New Horizons. And like, I'm like 4 or 5 days into a new town in New Leaf, like I kind of get where some of those people are coming from. Like I still really, really love some of the stuff that New Horizons added to the game, namely like the interior decorating, I think is just like such a cool fucking system. And like the ease of being able to change your character. Like I made a boy character forgetting that like the girl hair, like the only long hairstyles in this game are not accessible until after you've unlocked the hairstylist. And then after you've like gotten every single one of the boy haircuts once, and only then can you unlock like the opposite gender haircuts. Like as a boy with long hair, I never felt represented in these games, which, you know, is a far cry from the lack of representation that these games represent. Like you start this game and they're just like, hello little white boy, like you are this little white boy now. But I was like, damn it, I should have just picked a girl. I forgot that I couldn't have long hair. But like, New Horizons really just made you start engaging with so many systems so fast. Like you jump into that game and it was immediately like you are crafting now. Like you are collecting resources and you are crafting. And it also, they had a really good discussion about this on the Into the Aether podcast not too long ago when they were doing like their 3DS retrospective. Like they were pointing out that it really did start to feel like some of the conversations you had with characters got flat very fast in New Horizons. And I think that like that has been true of the Animal Crossing series, like from the GameCube one onward. Like they have slowly been getting less interesting in the conversations you have with visitors. They've just kind of like been slowly draining the pizzazz from it. And New Leaf still has a good bit of pizzazz, I think. Like it does feel varied in the things that like the villagers want you to do for them and the things that they want to talk about or the things they like, the activities that they offer you do. Like, I don't know. It's just like very fun and very enjoyable. And I just think handheld like this is like such a fun way to play Animal Crossing. Just like pick it up, flip open my DS, fish for 5 minutes, close my DS. Yes. In case anybody's curious, I named my town. This was with the help of a friend of the show, producer AJ. I named it Serotonin. I was trying to name it Serotonin because I was like, this is literally what this is functioning. This function is going to be in my life. But I was one past the character limit. But Serotonin kind of makes it sound like a Greek island. And I was like, yeah, that works. Like Serotonin is the island that Mamma Mia took place on in my head. So that's
it's like my favorite pasta shape.
Serotonin. But yeah, New Leaf is good. And like there's something really kind of sad and nostalgic playing it now that the 3DS servers are dead, because like my peak New Leaf playing was playing it when I was in high school. And like I had a lot of friends who had 3DSs, either like IRL friends or like people I met on Tumblr whose like island I went to trade fruit with and then just like stayed in their friends list. So it was like I was having the experience with New Leaf that like a lot of us had with New Horizons, where it was like you were constantly getting pinged when somebody logged on, or like, oh, let me go check and see whose gates are open, and then I'll go hop over to their town. Like, it's kind of sad knowing that that's like not a thing I can do anymore with this game. Like, I texted my cousin and I was like, hey, I started playing New Leaf again. Are you playing New Leaf still? And they were like, yeah. And if you had started a month ago, you could have come to my town. And it's like, it sucks that that is not an option anymore. And like, I get it. I understand that, like, you know, time marches on and shit, but like, I'm going to have to look into like those. Well, even if I did look into those like custom servers for the 3DS, like, I doubt people I know would be using them. But yeah, it's kind of sad, but yeah, it kind of feels
the
like
New Leaf Railroad has been federally defunded. You can't go visit your friends anymore.
It literally has. It kind of feels like going back to like a town where you used to have a lot of friends and you don't have those friends anymore. And it's like you still like you don't know anybody there anymore. And like you still really like the area and you still really like being there. But like the chance of you going into a bar and running into somebody you know is like negligible now, whereas like it was really high at one point. So it's kind of sad. It's kind of nostalgic for me, but I'm still really enjoying it. I think that's everything from me, though. Unless anybody has any really pithy Animal Crossing thoughts to add, I think we can probably wrap this up. All right.
I do, on the subject of town names, though, I played a little bit of Eudin Chronicle, which is, like, not a great game, but you do, like, found a castle toward the beginning, and it lets you pick the name of your castle. It gives you three options, but you can... the last option just like lets you reshuffle and get a whole new set of names. And I spent literally like 5 minutes reshuffling my options because they were all bad until I arrived at one called Meow Meow Town, which is like maybe the best in-game town name I've ever encountered. So now I'm the owner of Castle Meow Meow Town. Still not a very good game, but you know, it has Meow Meow Town.
I was really bummed to hear that was not a good game. Like, as a Suikoden fan, I was, like, really hoping that that was going to be good.
Yeah, same.
As we wrap up here, I want to thank the girls from Girl Mode for joining us today. It was a pleasure to have you all. Would you like to share where people can find y'all and where people can find your show and that kind of thing?
Sure. You can find the show, Girl Mode Pod, on Twitter or whatever. I think it's the same on Blue Sky. Just we link each other a lot. You'll find it. It's easy. And you can read my writing on Inverse, and you can follow me at Robin Bombus on social media as well.
And I'm on socials at The Willarow. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can find
Tori WBU.
You can find me on Twitter at Tori _as_always.
I'm on Twitter at Noah_Hurts, spelled H-U-R-T-S, and the podcast is on Twitter at press_startpod. We're on Tumblr and Blue Sky at press-startpod. Our show art is by Kai at Wisp Graphics, and our opener and closer are from the artist Geist. You can hear more of their stuff at noahgeist.bandcamp.com. And that about wraps things up. Anybody have any closing thoughts? Any, I don't know, whatever? Should we just go tell people to touch grass
now more than ever? They need to hear it.
Well, touch grass, but like play a farming sim, you know.
You can do both.
There we go.
Go play Harvestella.
Play Harvestella. Tell them we sent you.
Yeah, they know me.
All right. I went to Harvestella and everybody knew you. All right, thank you all for listening, and goodbye.